Okay. Now.
All right. So we are holding on Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph, nine lines from the bottom. Yet another one in. We've had this series of cases the last few days, mostly having to do with Chazaka, a few related ones that don't. So, another case. Hahu Damal El Chavri Mai Bois Vayara. Yet again, the usual beginning. One person says to another, what are you doing in this land? He says, I bought it from you. I had it for Shnei Chazaka. Well, okay, he needs Edim for that he was there for Shnei Chazaka. I see Chad Sada to Ochlet Plashni. All he was able to find was one aid that he had been there for, that he had been there and he had had the Paris for 3 years. One aid, not enough. Sovu Rabbanon Kameda Abaya Lamemar, so that Rabbanon, who were sitting as Talmidim in front of Abaya, thought to say, Hainu Naska Drababa. In that case, this would be similar or identical to the case called Naska Drababa. Naska is a bar of metal that involved Rababa, which we're going to discuss now what that case is. What's the similarity? So the Rashbam starts saying maybe they're not saying necessarily that it's similar in the sense that one that we learn one from the other. Obviously he has to return the karka. There's no question. He doesn't have two aiding. All they're doing is they're saying, you know, there's a similar case. You know there's a similar case out there. Naska Drababa. That's why according to the Rashba says that's one reason why that's not really a good explanation. Why would they just be bringing it? Stand to just say that there were. Yeah. So the other explanation that the Rashbam brings, and Tosfos also agrees with, and so do all the other Rishonim, is that what they're saying is there's no question. Obviously, the karka has to be returned. What do we do as far as the payers? If we didn't have Edim that he ate the payers, then like we discussed yesterday, he might have niggered to say I ate the payers, but they were mine, or he would be able to claim that he ate fewer payers than they're charging him for, or whatever. But like this, where there are Edim that he clearly ate the payers for 3 years, what do we do? Can we obligate him on that basis to repay the payers?
How could he say the payers was he?
Because he bought the place. He lost his shtar, that's his problem. But if he had had his shtar, he would have. He only had one aid. If he had had two aid him, had a shtar, he would have been good.
Problem, like,
yeah.
One aid.
Okay. Okay. Well, so they thought to say that this is like Naska Drabab. Namely, what's that case? Dahu gavered the chot of Naska Mechavre. It once happened that a person grabbed a piece of Naska, a piece of silver or whatever it is, from somebody else. Also the Kameh Drabami. So the case came as a din Torah to Drabami. Havad Yosef Rab Abba Kameh. And Rab Abba was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rab Ami. And the reason why that's important is because we're going to say later, Rab Ami wasn't sure how to pass in the din, and Rab Abba clarified it. So, I see. Chad Sada de Mechtev Chatzamine. Now, what happened is that the person who had originally been holding the bar of silver brought one aid that this other guy had grabbed it away from him. However, the guy who grabbed it, he said, okay, Ein Chatzvi, sure, I agree, I'm not contradicting that aid. Yes, I grabbed it. Vididi Chatzvi, but I grabbed what really belongs to me. This was originally my bar of silver. You took it from me illegally. I was just taking what belongs to me back. So now Rav Ami says, how are the Dayanim supposed to pass in this din? You have three factors over here. There are three. We're going to see. We're going to work through the factors, but we're going to see. There's three factors over here that each of them, that the fact that we have all of them prevent us from having a straightforward answer to the case. Lishalim. Okay. Possibility number one is, in other words, the Gemara itself is going to explain it, but let's run down what the Rashbam explains, what the problem is, what the three-sided problem is. If there were two Edim that he grabbed it, of course he'd have to pay. You can't believe him to say, I grabbed what's mine against two Edim. He would have to bring some proof that it was his, after all. But there's only one aid. If there was no aid at all, then he would have a migri. He could have said, I didn't grab it at all, because right now we see the silver is in his hands. And a third possibility is, suppose that we do see it in his possession, and there is one aid, but what if he were to contradict that aid and say, no, I didn't grab it, it was in my possession the whole time. Then Vaiter, what we would do is, an aid echad makes him have to swear, fine, he would swear I didn't grab it, and that's that. The problem is that now we have, there's only one aid, there's one aid, not zero and not two, and he is agreeing with that aid. He's just making a side claim, saying that you're very nice. You saw me grab it. I'm not disagreeing with that. But you don't know the underlying facts because this was mine to begin with.
So what do we? Since there's one aid, One has to prove, with real proof, that he didn't have a chazaka.
Why? Only one aid is only enough to make him have to swear. And he's not, and you can't make him swear over here because he, because he's not contradicting what the aid said. Or actually, there's a couple of reasons why he can't swear. Let's go through the Gemara, and we'll see there's a few reasons why he can't swear. So, l'shalim, should we make him have to pay? Can't. Like a trey sadi. There's no two aidim that he grabbed it. So he has a migur. He could have said I didn't grab it. We should believe him to say didi chaspi, that what I grabbed belongs to me.
Okay, didi chaspi would obviously not work with the aidim. He's not being machzik there.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. A person who's muchzik in something has a betalkal and has a chazaka on them. We don't assume that it's not his unless we have a valid reason otherwise.
So the moiti, he's the actual one.
Right. He would be the moiti. He would have to bring the raya.
The person who grabbed.
The person who grabbed, yeah.
Citizen's arrest.
What?
Not a citizen's seizure.
Right, yeah. Lifterei, should we just pass through him completely because of that migri? Can't. It's a chad sada. There's one aid against it.
He didn't say I took it.
Right. Lishtaba, should he have to swear? Can't. Ha'ama mechta chotra. After all, he says that he grabbed it. Therefore, having said that he grabbed it, he becomes like a gazlan.
He's not
a motive of mixas, yeah. Okay, so what do we mean? What do we mean?
He's either a gazlan or he's completely innocent.
Hold on. So what do we mean? What do we mean he's a gazlan? So that this is where this last part over here, we were saying that how can he swear? There's a couple of different ways that the Rishonim have to understand what the problem is with him swearing. Especially because Tosfos points out why Taka shouldn't he be able to swear that didi chafi, that what I grabbed is mine, and be able to accept that shavua on the basis of a migri that he could have said I didn't grab it at all. So the Rashbam explains like this. When do you say that when a person has one aid against him, he has to swear, is if what he's claiming and what the aid is saying are two opposites. If the aid is saying, for example, you owe Pliny money, and he's saying I don't, then you swear. Here he's not contradicting the aid. He wants to say a side point. Fine, I grabbed it, but didi chafi. According to the Rashbam, you can't allow. That's not the kind of shvua that the Torah would allow him to. Right.
Not that he didn't grab it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then Tosfos talks about a couple of other possibilities. One of them is that a person may well contradict one aid when there's no shvua involved. The person doesn't feel embarrassed to contradict one aid when there's no shvua involved. But over here, where there's shvua involved, he would think twice about contradicting the aid. Therefore, he doesn't have a migri. But what are you supposed to say? A migri that he could say we should accept a migri that he can say that it was mine. A migri that he could have said I didn't grab it at all. When it comes to a shvua, he's not gonna go
he's
contradict.
Why should?
But that's the point. We're trying to say he should have a migri that jidi chafi, that what I grabbed is mine. Migri that he could have said I didn't grab it at all. But if there's an aid against him, and we're talking about a shvua over here, you can't give him such a migri against an aid. He himself would be embarrassed to do a shvua like that against what an aid is saying. That's one point Tosfos brings up. Then
he could have said the other one took it from his hand, took it back.
Yeah, but that's a good point. Well, he's saying that is effectively what he's saying. He said, "Didi chafti, what I'm grabbing is mine." In other words, you didn't see the original part of the story. Fine, but it doesn't really matter. For our purposes, when the Adim came on the scene, the other guy was the Mukhtar. Right. All they saw was him. All they saw was him grabbing it. Okay, then Tosfos brings up another point from the Rivam that maybe the idea is that when you have one aid against him, then you can't have a migri, period. You can't have a migri to be potter, period. The only way you can be potter is with a shavua, and over here a shavua is not relevant. So then some of the Rishonim bring in, so again, the Rashbam brings in, so Tosfos is sort of ignoring what the Gemara says over here, have like a gazlan, and in fact there are some Rishonim who don't in fact have that girsa. The Rashbam himself understands it that relative to this shavua, it's not that we consider him a gazlan, a full-fledged gazlan, that he should be posel, that he should be posel la'edus or the shavua in the future. All it is relative to this issue over here, relative to this issue over here, he's like a gazlan because he has one aid against him, saying that he grabbed it. Different other Rishonim talk about different other possibilities, since he himself admits,
proved he was a gazlan.
No, but relative to this, again, since the Rashbam is understanding that we can't allow him to swear on something where he's not contradicting the aid, we can't allow him to swear on a side point.
Let me ask you a question.
The reason why that doesn't work is because we consider him, relative to this shul, he's pasul kagazlan.
He agrees with the other guy that he took it.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that he says he had a chazaka. Why can't we make it?
Because we need to have a chazaka on it.
Swear on the chazaka.
But that's the thing. We can't make him swear for any of these various reasons that we talked about so far. Either because what he's swearing on is not what the aid is saying. The aid is saying you grabbed it. He's not contradicting that. The Torah only gives him the nemonos to swear where he's swearing against what the aid says. And Tosfos, again, gives a bit of a different twist on that he himself would be embarrassed to swear falsely against something that an aide is saying, and therefore we can't give him that migri. And again, also the possibility maybe that a migri is not relevant where the matter of shavur comes in.
In essence, the other guy is saying that he doesn't have a chazaka. Not only does...
Doesn't matter. If he wants to say he has a chazaka, again, when the aidim came on the scene, he wasn't the muchzik. He's the one who we see grabbing it away.
Yeah.
Therefore, if he wants to say I had a previous chazaka, go bring aidim on your side. No aidim, then
the only way you can
he needs some kind of proof that he himself had the chazaka. Yeah,
and you cannot swear on a chazaka.
The question is why he can't swear that didi chatbi. But those are the different answers that I'm just those are the different. So that would amount to the same thing. Didi chatbi amounts to saying I had a chazaka on it.
Yeah.
And those are the different reasons that we're saying why he can't do that.
Yeah, but that's not what I'm asking. What I'm asking is, why can't we make him swear that he had a chazaka before?
I don't understand. Swearing that he had a chazaka is identical to swearing didi chafti, that what I grabbed was mine. That's exactly the same thing. What?
It's not the same.
What? He's agreeing that he's
saying a chazaka and taking something for something else. Two different things.
The aide saw that he grabbed it. He's not contradicting that he grabbed it. He's not contradicting. If he were to contradict it, fine, we would have a migrant. He's not contradicting that fact. The only reason he's saying, I had a valid reason to grab it because it was mine. I had a chazaka. And we are saying we cannot accept such a shvur from him. Anyway, there are other Shonim who explain that actually because he himself admits that he grabbed it, that itself, or not really that itself, the combination of that plus the one aid is enough to make him a gazlan and actually possible shvur. Okay. Anyway, so what do we do over here? So we're stuck. Rav Abba answers, it says to his Rebbe, Rabami, in that case, have a mechuyav shvur sheina yochal ishava. In that case, we have a situation over here of somebody who would be chayav to swear, however, he's not able to swear, which there are such cases where we have cases, for example, where one of the people was choshered on a shvur, for example, and therefore he can't swear. This explanation, by the way, that he's a gazlan, and that for example, Marshal brings this. So according to that, it would mean then it's a regular case in Mechuyav Shvura Ve'eni Yochel Lishava, because now that we consider him a gazlan and therefore he can't swear. According to the other explanation, it's not that in general he's a gazlan, but in this specific case, there's reasons for the various reasons that we just talked about that he's not able to swear. Well, V'chola Mechuyav Shvura She'eni Yochel Lishava Mishalem. Well, if you're Chayav Shvura but you're not able to swear, then the rule is you have to pay. So in that case, then they talk about what was Rav Ami's question in the first place. One thing is, Tosfos points out over here at some length that actually this not everybody agrees to this statement of Rav Abba. There's actually in Shavuos, which is the original place where this case is brought. So we'll learn it there next year, Be'ez Hashem. Rav and Shmuel both disagree with Rav Abba over there. They say we would give him a migri. So therefore, the migri that we said before, that migri that he could have said he could have contradicted the aid and said I didn't grab it. Therefore, we should believe him to say didi chafi.
Yeah.
They hold of that, but Rav Abba disagrees. The halacha, by the way, is like Rav Abba.
Yeah, but
okay.
Rav Abba and Rav Ami is his rebbe.
Yeah, Tosfos talks about
it. They're all the first generation.
Rav Ami is the third generation the Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan, and Rav Abba then would be the fourth. So it just points out there are places where Rav Ami. What?
So how are they discussing it with Rav and Shmuel?
They're not. The Rav and Shmuel talked about it in a previous generation, and now Rav Abba is saying they're all
Amorim.
They're
coming back.
Yes.
Okay.
How can we deny him the migui when one ed is insufficient to prove?
But one ed is enough to break up his migui for the reasons that we discussed. Again,
is enough to break up his migui.
Again, there are a few possibilities over here. One of them being, so you have Tosfos's point. You have Tosfos's point, for example, that a migui only works where it would be just as easy for him to make the other claim as the original, as the one he actually makes. But here it's not as easy for him to, because one of them involves contradicting the aid, and the other one does not. And therefore, he's not going to do that. Therefore, psychologically, he's not going to be as it's not going to be as easy for him to do one as to do the other. Therefore, there's no migui.
I don't see why you cannot contradict one aid.
Because psychologically, a person is not going to do that. If there's one aid against him, especially he's always concerned, what if another aid shows up, and then he's for sure going to be exposed as a complete liar. So he's not going to do that.
You can't assume he could do it, but you can't assume that he could have.
You can't assume
done
that he could have easily done
make
it.
Make a migui.
Right.
Why not?
Because that's not how a person would do. That's not how a migui works. Exactly. Okay. Anyway, the point is the Talmidim of Abaya thought to say then that our case that we started with over here, where this guy brought one aid that he had occupied the land and eaten the potatoes for 3 years, should be identical to that. Because you have the same kind of thing, in other words, that you have on the face of it, you have one aid saying that he ate the potatoes. One aid is not enough to establish him as the owner of the karka, because there's no second aid to say that he had chazaka. The one aid, though, is saying that he ate the payrus, and the other guy is admitting, sure, I ate the payrus for 3 years, but it's because it's mine. Should be exactly the same. Amalu Abaya, however, Abaya says to them, midomi. How do you think to compare it? Hosam sadu la'irua fa'asi. The difference is that in the case of Naska de Rav Abba, the aid is coming to contradict him. It's just, not contradicted. It's right. The aid is coming to make things worse for him. The fact that there is that one aid weakens his migui, and should have made him that he's chayav shvur, and mitoch sheni yachol l'shava m'shalim. Hachal asayui kasi. Sorry, I skipped the line. Ki osachru, and the reason is why is la'irui la important? Ki osachrina bade, because if suppose another aid were to come and testify to the same thing, suppose a second aid comes and also says that he grabbed it. Then we will absolutely have to take it away from him. Then we don't even talk about mitoch sheni yachol l'shava or anything like that. Then there's two aidim against him. That's that. Hacha l'sayui kasi. Over here, the one aid who says that he ate the potatoes for 3 years is actually coming in order to help him, because this aid is saying that he had chazaka for 3 years.
Saying that he ate the potatoes.
But he's saying that he had chazaka for 3 years. That's a different case. And in the other case, in Naska de Rav Abba, the aid doesn't know anything about him being previously morphed. All he says is, I saw that he grabbed it away from him. Here, the aid is coming and saying, I testify this guy Taka bought the field and had chazaka of it for 3 years.
If the other aid would have said, I saw him at the bar for 3 years and you never said anything.
Well, McAlpin, you don't know, chazaka
yeah.
for three
well,
years.
Well, I'm just saying, yeah. You know, then it would be really similar.
And in fact, if another aide were to come and also say that he had the payrus and the character for 3 years, then he'd be able to keep it. So it's exactly the opposite. Ella idamya hold it up, Abba. So no, if you want to.
So what is the intent of the aidim?
No, it's not what
the outcome is.
No, not the intent of the aidim, but in other words, you can't say, in other words, the case of a chazaka, you can't say on the basis of that one aid he's mechuy of shvur. The aid is not coming to be mechayev and shavur in the first place. The aid is coming to say this guy ate payrus that belonged to him.
So he's questioning the word. Abai is questioning the chiddush.
Yes. Eli idamya, hold it up, Abba. So no, rather, if you want to draw a comparison between the case of Naska the Rav Abba and a case of Chazaka, it would have to be a little bit differently. L'chad sada ul'tautish ni'ul'peri. It would have to be, suppose that, again, you have only one aid, but we're only talking about 2 years, and we're talking about the payrus.
Right.
In other words, the case is, the Rashbam says, so Reuben comes and says, my boy's bahayara, or not even, he just comes and says straight out, you stole my land, you ate the payrus for 2 years. Shimon says, I bought it from you. There's no Eide Chazaka. So then what would happen is that if there were no Eidim, then he would be able to swear that Apesha also Apesha Hitu, and we would say therefore he doesn't have to repay the payrus because he's admitting that he ate the payrus, but he's saying I bought them. It's another form of the migui that we said earlier. But if there's eight, if there's one aid that he ate the payrus for 2 years, then you have exactly the same situation as Nafka de Rababa, where the aid would be coming and say the aid, two years is not enough to establish chazaka. So that aid, by saying 2 years, if the aid says only 2 years, that he only ate it for 2 years for sure, then the aid is coming to be mechayiv him sure. Even if the aid, as the Rashba adds, even if the aid is only coming, even if the aid only says 2 years, where, okay, 2 years doesn't necessarily mean only 2 years, conceivably it could mean three, but the fact of the matter is, if another aid shows up and says the same thing, 2 years, that's it. Then there's no question, then he's got to repay all the payers. Therefore, it's exactly like the case of Nafka de Rababa, where the aid, again, it's not so much the intent of the aid. The aid himself may have thought that he's coming and doing the guy a favor. That's not the point. But the point is, by saying 2 years, rather, by saying he had he had chazaka for 2 years, which is not enough to make chazaka, versus 3 years, that's the key difference. Is he being mechayiv him shvur or not?
So again, you're saying that Abaya's issue was
the fact that the aid is not coming to be,
and in effect making you make a shura.
Right.
Or circumstantially, did you have to make a shura?
No. So in the case of the 3 years, it's not
the rabba. It was a certain
thing that
did he make a shura. Not that
right.
The aid's intent was that he should have to make a shura.
Right. Right. Well, in general, when one aid comes, he's not necessarily he knows that he's only one aid. He may.
That was therefore it wasn't equatable.
That was Abaya's point. So if the aid is coming, so if the aid, again, if the aid comes and says he had the chazaka for 3 years, that taina does not require him to make a shavua on that basis. But if he says only 2 years, that's going to require him to make a shavua. And exactly like the case of Nafka de Rababa, he says ein chafti v'didi chafti. Sure, I took the payrus for those 2 years, but they belong to me. And therefore, you have exactly the same analogy where he's mechuyav shavua, and since he can't swear, then he's going to have to pay for the payrus for the 2 years.
Just clarify one more point again. But Abaya had the issue, according to Abaya, he wouldn't be an extra pigavon. And in fact, he would either have been Mokhayushu or not Mokhayushu. What was his? He took issue with the case of Nafka de Rababa and the Shua point.
Right.
What was? And he was going to, he paskin differently in the case of Nafka de Rababa?
No, I agree that in Nafka de Rababa, Mitochshen Yochel Yishofim Mishalim, he says, I'm disagreeing in the case where you have one aid for 3 years, that guy is not Mechayev and Shavua in the first place. You can't say Mitochshen Yochel Yishofim Mishalim. There's no Mitochshen Yochel Yishofim. There's no Shavua that he should be taking in the first place over here.
We couldn't have been in the place.
Yeah. Another case. Ahu Arba Davaminsu Allah Beitre. There was a vote where two people were arguing about it. Hayama didihu, b'hayama didihi. Each one said that it belongs to him. Neither one was muchzik in it. Neither one actually was holding on to it. Neither one had it in their rishus or anything like that. If they had both been grabbing a hold of it, then it would be like a case of shneimos and metalis. They would each get whatever they can hold on to, and the rest we would split. Well, also chad minayu lebedina. One of them comes to the beis din ba'amar tifsua, and he says to the beis din, I want you to grab a hold of this. I want you to put an injunction basically on the boat, so that the other guy can't go and sell it. Let's say before the case is decided. The Rashbam adds he's not worried about that the other guy may grab a hold of it while he's going off to Beis Din, because fine, once we know there's an argument about it, if the other guy grabs it without, then there's no question. His grabbing doesn't add anything more to the situation before. But his concern is the other guy's going to sell it, and then I'm going to have the hassle of trying to figure out or trying to get it back from the buyer or whatever.
There's a loose pendant on it.
So he says, Tifsua Admaisina Sadi Didi. I want you to grab a hold of it until I can bring Adim that it is mine. So the question is, Tafsina and I like Tafsina. Well, do we grab a hold of it? Does Beis Din do that? Do they put this, whatever the term was you just used, list pendants, yeah? Do they put an injunction on it, yeah, to hold on to it, or not? The point of the question is that Ashbam explains like this. If we're going to end up saying that if neither one can bring any proof what's going to be with it, then we're going to say kol da'alim gvar. The question is, therefore, once Beis Din has grabbed a hold of it, can we just say, okay, no, nobody brought Adim, so we'll return it to the original status quo, we'll leave it as Kol Da'alim Gvar, or do we say once it was in the possession of Beis Din, we don't have the ability to do that anymore, and therefore it'll come out that whoever could have gotten it before under Kol Da'alim Gvar is losing out. So do we have the ability to do that or not? Rav Huna amar tafsinan, Rav Yehuda amar lo tafsinan. So Rav Huna says we do grab it, Again, the Rashbam says the reason is because he figures that, as the Gemara is going to bring the next Machlokas in a minute, that even after Beis Din grabbed it, fine, they can always release it back to Kol Da'al Mubar if nobody brings any proof. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Lo Tefsin, and Rabbi Yehuda says not, because he would hold that you can't. Once it was in the hands of Beis Din, you can't return it to Kol Da'al Mubar. Okay, so this gets into the general question, what is the reasoning behind Kol Da'al Mubar anyway? The Rashbam holds, and so do a couple of other Rishonim, that Kol Da'al Mubar is basically based in saying, look, we don't know what to do over here, so we're washing our hands of the situation. You guys can argue it out or fight it out between yourselves. The Rashbam understands it that way. Therefore, if based in had it at any time in their possession, they don't have the ability to go and return it to Kol Da'al Mubar to leave it as a free-for-all. The fact is, it was in based in hands. They're responsible. Once it came into their possession, once it got under their control, they're responsible to see the thing out to the finish. It's vaguely like Zulusid Vedina, not exactly, but yeah. If they never had a hold of it in the first place, sure, they have the ability to say
denial of justice, basically.
Yeah, sort of. On the other hand, the Rosh has a very interesting svara behind the concept of Kol Da'al Mubar. He says that you're going to have like this. First of all, he says, psychologically, the one to whom it really belongs is going to fight harder for it. When you know that the truth is really on your side, you're going to fight all the harder for it than the guy who deep down knows that attacker doesn't belong to him. Second of all, he says also, look, eventually, in all likelihood, some kind of evidence is going to come up, whether it belongs to one or the other. Even if you're going to say that the one guy who it doesn't really belong to, let's say, for example, fine, he might be willing to put himself into it, to be moist and nefesh for it. He may figure, why should I bother? And if I go and then work as hard as I can and fight as hard as I can to get it, so what? Eventually the other guy is going to go bring Adim or whatever, and it's going to get taken away from me anyway. And that itself makes him hold back a little bit. So therefore, according to the Russian, in other words, Kol Da'al Mubar is a full-fledged psak of Beis Din. There is a case. It's not like the Rashbam says washing their hands
just
of it, but rather just the opposite, saying that we decide officially that Kol Da'al Mubar. In that case, then, so there are some of the Achronim who explain the machlokas over here in the Gemara may depend on that machlokas Rishonim of what the idea behind Kol Da'al Mubar is.
Why wasn't the Pesach the Yachlokas, like you said?
That's what we're going to get into, Yachlokas. The Gemara itself is going to get into that in a minute.
Right. The Kol Da'al Mubar is also not best in saying, okay, we're Mubatil all ownership previously, go be
No, and that is why, that's why the Rashbam made the point that neither of them was Muchzik in it. If one of them was Muchzik in it, there's not the Torah, you can't say Kol Da'al Mubar. A couple of other things about this, by the way, that Rashbam uses the expression under Kol Da'al Mubar. He says bein berayis bein bekoyach. Doesn't necessarily mean fighting it out, with fists. It can also mean with rayis, not necessarily rayis that be strong enough to stand up and base in, but at least rayis that to try to convince the other guy that I'm in the right after all. So apparently, what the Rashbam means, you try first with that. You try first jaw, and if jaw doesn't work, then it's war, as the expression goes. There is an interesting idea that the Shlus Yaakov, one of the Achronim about 300 years ago, brings that he wants to say that in our times we shouldn't do Kol Da'al Mubar anymore. He says for two reasons. Number one, he says that you're going to have I forgot to mention one other detail, by the way. The Rosh also holds before we get into what the Shlus Yaakov says. The Rosh also holds once one of them has grabbed it under Kol Da'al Mubar, we're not going to allow the other one to re-grab it back to them, because otherwise it'll just go back and forth endlessly. So again, this goes with the Rosh's idea that with the idea that the Rosh is understanding it as an actual psak. It's an actual psak that Kol Da'al Mubar. Therefore, that's it. Once one of them has managed to get it under Kol Da'al Mubar, that's it. On the other hand, according to the Rashbam's understanding, sure, it could go back and forth endlessly.
Why don't we say it goes on it if one takes it from the other?
Because that's Kol Da'al Mubar is based in a saying, is paskening. That's it.
Now it's a psak, and the case before it was goes on it. When you take something from somebody else,
here, based in themselves, are saying Kol Da'al Mubar. In the previous case, it wasn't like that. Anyway, I was going to say, so the Shmuel Yaakov says two things. Number one, he says nowadays, the goyim punish people. The goyim have very, very stiff penalties for a person hitting or beating up somebody else. So for that reason, you can't have Kol Da'al Mubar if two of them are going to get into a fight. Number two, he says that the Rosh is saying that the one who it really belongs to is going to be more moiser nefesh for it. Can you really say that nowadays? You have gazlonim, you have ganavim, who are moiser nefesh for their gneiv or whatever. So he says it shouldn't apply. There's also, by the way, there's an idea that the Rabbi Chanan Wasserman brings in a couple of his svarim. He says even when we say kol dam gvar, and even maybe if we accept what the Rosh says that there's an actual psaka based in, nevertheless you can't say enough the person's thing that, for example, if this thing they were arguing about was an esrog, not necessarily can you be yotze with it on sukkahs, not necessarily can be considered lochet even under that.
But the catch 22 is not really
psak. Right, but even if we say that it's a psak, but it's not 100%.
They would have had it otherwise if they could.
Yeah, basically.
They don't have another solution, basically.
Yeah, I'll tell you. By the way, before we continue, I want to also tell that while I was preparing this and then looking up things involving Kol Dam Gvar, I came across a rather interesting story. Almost you could say a chassidish story, except it's not a chassidish story because it involves the Chazon Ish that involves Kol Dam Gvar. Back in the early 50s, a few years after the State of Israel had been established, they decided they wanted to centralize education. There's going to be all education in Israel is going to be government-funded, government-run or whatever. There'll be secular, there'll be religious, but that's it. It has to be one or the other of those.
No private.
No, right. So the Rebbe dealt with it a lot. You can look in Igros Kodesh about it. The Rebbe talked with Rav Zusha de Partizan and then various other Askanim, the various other Lubavitcher Askanim in Eretz Yisrael to work on setting up Lubavitch-run schools within the Mamlachti Dati system, within the religious public school system. So one of their early ones actually was a school in Rehovot. I went there when I was a kid. So they had these are public religious schools, but they were run and staffed and whatever by the Babichers. The rest of the Haredim in
Chabad government school.
Sort of. The rest of the Haredim in Israel didn't want any of that. They wanted their own independent system. So the story has it then that a group of them went to talk to the Chazon Ish about it. The government is giving us problems about it. What should we do? He tells them Kol Dam Gvar. So they figured he meant, okay, well look, you know, the Israeli government's got all the power, we don't, so okay, we're just gonna have to give in. They start leaving. He calls him back and he says, I think you're misunderstanding me. I meant Kol Dam Gvar in the sense that the Rosh is saying if the one who knows the truth is on their side is going to work all the harder on it. You know the truth is on your side. Be moiser nefesh for it. And that's the upshot of it was they got the famous Chinuch Atzmai. They eventually got the official permission to establish a private school system. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara. Okay, so that's machlokas number one. Are we tofus it or not? Rav Huna says no. Rav Huna says yes. Rav Yehuda says no. Also, the way Ashkach Sadi. Next, what happened is this person went to look for Edim that he owned the boat. He couldn't find any. Amalhuapkura. So he says to the Beis Din, okay, well, give it back. So let it go. Either they passed in previously like Rav Huna, and so they grabbed it, or let's say the Rashbam says another possibility, maybe both of them mutually agreed that Beis Din should be tofus it for the time. No, let's say they both mutually agreed that Beis Din should be tofus it for the time being. So now the one guy comes and says, Apkua, let it go, the whole island class. Yeah, up until now they put it in escrow. Now one of them comes and says, Apkua, let it go, the whole island bar. Question is, Mapkinen or Le Mapkinen? Well, now do we release it back to Kold Island bar or not? Rabbi Yehuda Amar Lo Mapkinen, Rabbi Papa Amar Mapkinen. So again, the Rashbam says that this is essentially one machlokes. Or we tofus it because if we tofus it, we may not be able to release it. Tosfos explains that's not it. It's actually two unrelated machlokes. What the machlokes about tafsinan or lo tafsinan is when this guy is saying, "I want you to be tofus it until I bring edim." Do we do that? Do we believe that he's going to be able to find edim or not? Rav Huna says yes. Rav Yehuda says no. If then they were tofus it as b'dieved or whatever, were they fasting like Rav Huna, then there's a separate machlokes. Should we release it back to Kol Dam Gvar or not?
How would they do that? I'd say they could do it.
Let's say they could. Then it means, in other words, up until now, we had it based in the dock.
Right.
Now we're going to release it back and then to just out into the public and Kol Dam Gvar of you two. Whichever one grabs it is going to be whichever one overpowers the other is going to be the first. It's going to be the first one to get it.
It would be let them fight together and then
whoever survives is...
Not survives, but whoever manages to overpower the other. Now, the bottom line halacha is we do not grab it. We don't put it in escrow lachila. The hecha the tofas. However, if they did, for one reason or another, we do not let it back out to Kol Dalim Bar. It stays in Beis Din's Rishus until the two of them can figure it out between themselves. What about another case? Now, how about one of them says it belonged to my father, and the other one said it belonged to my father? So the Rashbam says this is not necessarily a direct continuation of a story from before. It could apply to a boat. It could equally well apply to karka. The difference is, in previous cases when we discussed Zeh Meshal Avoyseh, they had Edim, they had Chazaka, they had whatever. Here, nobody has anything. Or we have the karka or the boat or whatever it is, neither of them is any more muchzik than the other.
No chazaka.
No chazaka, no nothing. Each one claims shalavoisai, no edim, no nothing. What happens? Amar Rav Nachman called the Alan Gvar. So this is another case where Rav Nachman says called the Alan Gvar. So now comes your question.
Now, how can they do that with karka?
Again, it
wasn't a question of running whoever.
It's not whoever can grab it first. It's whoever can overpower the other one first with riot, ben be riot, ben be koyach. So with karka also they can fight over it. I saw by the way a funny thing from one of the from one of the later achronim from Morocco. Where he asks, and if you yourself are a weak person, can you hire somebody to fight on your behalf for Kol Dalim Gvar? On the one hand, Shlucha Shalom to Moisei. On the other hand, Toifus Labachoy Mokam Shechav La'Acherim. He says, I'm not sure, but Lachor or not.
It's like making a slave after the song on for you.
Yeah, okay.
That sounds even better.
But it's going to be thinking of
Onwards. But now comes your question. Why are we saying Kol Dalim Gvar over here? Why is it different than a case that we have of two shtaris on one field that both came out on the same day? So the Rashbam says we're talking over here specifically about shtari matana, where there's two shtaris. One says that Reuven gifted this field to Shimon. Another one says he gifted it to Levi. They're both dated the same day. Many other Rishonim say it's not just talking about Matana, it can also be talking about Mecher, it can also be talking about bills of sale. Whatever, they're both dated the same day. Because when we're going to say over here, Shuda Daini, we're going to talk in a second. Okay, so if you have a two-story Matanas, or according to everybody else, two-story Mecher, whatever, that are both dated the same day. Now, in a Shtar, you don't write what time it was written, you only write the date. Except in Yerushalayim. So therefore, the Gemara
is today's
shtar. I don't know what they do in today's shtar, but in halacha, shtar is only dated by the day. There's two ways of looking at the machloikas. By the way, we learned in Ksuvos, Rashbam and Tosfos both bring it over here. There's two. Now we learned back in Gittin, you have the famous machloikas Edi Chasima Kauti or Edi Mesira Kauti. What's the key thing when it comes to a get and in more general shtaris? When the Edim signed it or when it was delivered. If we look at it that Edi Chasima Kauti, then it means since both shtaris were signed on the same day, they only take effect that evening. They only both take effect at the end of the day, both at the same time. If we look at it from the point of view of Edi Mesira Kauti, fine, conceivably one of them might have been delivered before the other. However, we don't have any proof one way or the other. And also, so especially that Ramban points out also, even if we ask the Edim and they don't know, it's not like they're likely to remember at some later date. So therefore, we really don't know. So what happens? The Rav Amar Yachloiku Shmuel Amar Shuda Dedaini. Rav says in that case, what they do is they divide it, because it's a suffix. You can't say Amoitz Mechaber L'Varaya, neither one has a Chazaka on it, therefore Yachloiku. Or Shmuel Amar Shuda Dedaini. Well, so what does it mean, Shuda Dedaini? Okay, so the Rashbam explains that it means the Rashbam over here, Rashi and Ksubas, explains that it means the Dayanim themselves have to figure out who is it more likely that Reuven wanted to give it to more. Which one was his closer friend, which one was his closer relative, whatever it is, and that would be the one that they give it to. So it's not really the discretion of Beis Din, it's based in the evaluation of what the Nos and Matana would have meant. And that's one reason you're asking why the Rashbam refers this to Shari Matana. That's why, because if it's Shari Mecher, you can't say that it depends on that.
Well, yeah. Know that.
Yeah. Okay. On the other hand, Tosfos explains...
Strange things do happen.
Yeah, okay. Tosfos explains that Shudda Dedaini means that it's completely at the Dayanim's discretion. They can decide based on whatever factors they want.
Discretion.
Now, with that said, the various Rishonim and the Poskim say it's not so simple. When we say they can use whatever discretion they want, it doesn't mean, for example, let's say you can't have one or the other side goes and give them money or something in order to rule in their favor, that not. But mind you, by the way, the Yerushalmi has the expression, the Yerushalmi calls it, instead of shudda d'dayini, calls it shuchda d'dayini, literally meloshen shoshad. Actually, the Korban Edo there on the Yerushalmi in Ksuba does want to say that maybe you're allowed in this unique case to give them shoshad. All the posts...
Shuchda is an istia? What is the literal,
Literal translation of shoshad is bribery.
Right. No, so I'm saying, but in that context...
Well, so that's the thing. So the Korban Edo wants to take it literally and says that at least according to the Yerushalmi, it should mean you're literally allowed to give the Dayanim shoshad to decide it your way. Everybody else disagrees with that, though, and says that that's not what it means. It means that the Dayanim can use their discretion. It means, for example, they can say, let's say one of them is a Tamid Chacham and the other one is not. Therefore, in this, normally you're not allowed to rule in favor of a Tamid Chacham against somebody else, but in a case like this, you're allowed to. So in that sense, it's like Sheikhad. They're sort of, they have an atiyah, they have sort of an intangible bribe based on the fact that the guy's a Tamid Chacham.
Maybe they can find that the original, the Nation Matana would also favor a Tamid Chacham.
Maybe that would be according to the Rashbam, maybe, but according to Tosfos, you don't even need that. Point is, they themselves are entitled to do it on their own. Then they flip a coin. I don't know, but anyway, that's shudda d'dayini. The point
what
is shudda literally means throwing. That's the Ashbam explains shudda loshen hashlocha yora b'yam mitagmin shdi b'yama. So like you throw it in one direction or another. Yeah, shudda b'atakatsva. Yeah. Okay, so the bottom line is then why is Reb Nachman saying over here called al ingvar when you have either yachloku or shudda d'dayini? Why should it be any different over here? The answer is hotam leka lamekam ala demilsa, because the difference is, in the case of the two shtaris, there's no way of ever figuring it out. Because both shtaris, inherently, there's a suffix, because both shtaris are dated on the same day. And again, like the Ramban says, even if you were to ask, even if you say Edom is Sira Kauti, you ask the Edom already, they said they don't know, it's not like they're suddenly going to remember. Therefore, there's no way of figuring it out. Hacha ikala mekam ala demilsa. Here, in the case of the boat, in principle, in the case of Zerma Shalavosa, Zerma Shalavosa, in principle, there is a way of figuring it out. If yes, field or boat, whatever it is, eventually, Edim may show up on one side or the other. So therefore we shouldn't say yachloiku, because then for sure it can't possibly be right. They weren't necessarily both partners in it to begin with. We shouldn't say shudda d'dayini. Better we should say kol ba'al
and gvar. Are you saying circumstantially they can't prove it, or perfect? In this instance they're not able to because it's the beginning of the case.
Well, that's actually a point the Gemara is going to take up next.
If you did all the research and there's no one who's coming to the fore and saying any tinyness, then they may as well be the same.
No, but the point is, intrinsically, it is something that, in principle, you could find. Next, the question is, my shnomer hodetznan. Fine. Still, though, why is it different than yet another case that we learned in Bava Metzia? Hamachlis parav b'chamor b'yolda. If two people have a cow and a donkey respectively, and they exchange one for the other, where as soon as one does meshicha on one, automatically the other one is koina the other. The yolda, and one of the animals gave birth, and again, the Gemara explains in Ksubas over there, neither the para that gave birth, or the shifcha, in the next case, was not in either one's rishus. Again, if it was in one of theirs rishus, if it was in the rishus of one of them or the other, then that moitzvah chavel of anayim. But it's not in the rishus of either one of them.
Before the
or a person sells his shifcha, and she gave birth. The one says that it gave birth, the kara or the shifcha gave birth before I sold it. Therefore, the vlad belongs to me. I only sold the mother, not the vlad. The other one says it gave birth after I bought it, and therefore I own the vlad as well. Yachloku. In that case, they split it.
Isn't that the same as the case with Nesim Matana?
It's not shy to be
cleared up.
The Gemara doesn't realize that distinction yet. At this point, l'chora, it is ikala mekam ala demilsa, the Rashbam says. If Edim were to come and say when the parah gave birth, or when the shifcha gave birth, then
case of the Nation Matana, Edim can show up and say, the man told me. To give this guy my phone.
No, but it should have denied me. But that we're saying we want to avoid.
We're assuming a weird case of Aiden showing up. It's very unlikely that Aiden can know when the parade is.
Right. Yeah.
An Aitken can show up like an Aitken show up and say, I saw the target.
No, but that's should a Dedaini means that we would ask who he favored. If that we were trying to say, is there a way to avoid should a Dedaini? Is there a way to say that
there was also Yachloku?
Well, Yachloku was Rav.
Right.
Okay, but well, Rav holds Yachloku. One thing the Gemara mentions over there in Ksubas is that Rav may figure it's true Yachloku in a certain sense is going to be less true because Lechura, it belonged all to one, all to the other. Yachloku, you're thinking you're splitting the difference, but inevitably it means that. But on the other hand, you could argue that's not, because it, like this, it should have belonged 100% to one or 100% to the other, and you're saying 50-50, which is for sure
that's
not the way.
The reality.
Okay, nevertheless, so one way of looking at it is Rav holds that's true, but nevertheless, that's better than should have denied.
Which is a pure
not denial of justice, but it's a pure evaluating based on external factors or whatever, not based on the facts we have in front of us. Yeah.
No, I was thinking about a face value is less comparable to the case of to leka lameka malala milta. It's bechayah also leka lameka.
But at this point, we don't realize that. The fact is, in that case, it was leka lameka malala milta because both of them are dated the same day.
Here.
Over here, in principle, there could have been Edim around. The answer is, and we say Yachloku. Now, okay, the Gemara explains over there that's only some close who says Yachloku, the Chum would say Amor to Mechaber Levaraya. But because they would say that the Parah or the Shifcha had a Cheskas Marakama, the Parah originally belonged to somebody, and the Shifcha originally belonged to somebody. But the Chachamim themselves would agree where there's no Cheskas Marakama, like in this case over here, both of them are claiming Shalavoisai, and neither one has a Chazaka to begin with, then they would agree that Yachloku. Okay, so why Yachloku over there and Kol Da'al Mivar over here? The answer is Hosam Lahai Isle Dror Der Mamoina, Ulahu Isle Dror Der Mamoina. Because the difference is, in that case of the Parah and the Chamur, each one has a Drar de Mamoina. What is Drar de Mamoina? The Rashbam says it means like this. Each one at one time owned the thing. At one time, Reuven owned the Parah. Later on, Shimon owned the Parah. Same thing with the Shifcha. Drar means a connection, Mike. So at each one had a connection to this Parah at some point. One owned it at one time. The other owned it at another time. Therefore, so, okay, you don't know. Did it happen when it was in your Rishus? Did it happen when it was in your Rishus? Or maybe it happened at the moment when the Chalifin was taking place. So therefore you have no choice, Yachloku. But when it comes to a Matana, again, based in can figure out which one is he likely to have given it to 100%. So neither one has a Drar de Mamoina in the sense. It didn't first belong to one and then to the other. It never belonged to either one. That's the Rashbam's explanation of Dura Dermamoina. We're asking according to Rav Nachman. First of all, anyway, the halacha is like Shmuel, anyway, Shudda Dedaini. So we have three different cases. We have Kol Da'al Mivar, we have Shudda Dedaini, and we have Yachloku. So what is it? So, okay, Tosfos explains Dura Dermamoina differently. Dura Dermamoina means there's an intrinsic suffix over here. Not like we were thinking that maybe after all there were Edim there. Intrinsically, before they even come with their tainus to Beis Din, you have a suffix,
right.
Was the baby born before or after the chalifin? As opposed to when these two guys come to Beis Din, Zerem HaShalavosei, Zerem HaShalavosei, the suffix wouldn't exist if they didn't come to Beis Din. So therefore, that's different.
Yeah, but is it sufficient to allow...
Well, that's therefore we have to say, therefore it's different, and therefore we say, call down on the ground. Hacha idemar lo demar veidemar lo demar. Whereas over here, in our case of the field or the boat or whatever it is, with zemeshalavayse, it absolutely belongs either to one or to the other. There wasn't necessarily any time that it belonged to one and then to the other. The suffix only exists because of their tainus, and it belongs 100% to one and not to the other. Therefore, we can't say yachloku. Therefore, there's no reason to say shudda d'daini, and therefore we're left with Kol Da'al Mivar. Amri Nahardai. So now the Chachamim of Nahardai said another din connection with this case of Zer Meshalavotze, Zer Meshalavotze. So far we had two people where each one wants to claim that it's theirs, and we said Kol Da'al Mivar. What happens if a third party gets involved? Even ba echad nashuk vehechzikla, if a third party were to come off the street and grab a hold of the karka or boat or whatever it is, we will not take it away from him, even though he doesn't have any particular taina. Because look, not necessarily do either of the other ones have any ownership of it either.
So he's saying before Akol de Elam Gvar, it says this is Tefter.
In that,
had one of them
in sure.
Bezdin,
Yeah.
I mean, like, didn't Besen put it in a trust? No, that was...
No, that, we said that. They're not trusted. We said they're not
trusted.
But it's not. We said we're not. It's not. It's still out there. Yeah. So therefore, Ein Metzia Nos Miyada. We don't take it away from them. By the way, Tosfos points out an interesting point. What would happen, for example, let's say these guys say, you know what? It's true. We can't agree among ourselves who it belongs to. However, we know for sure it doesn't belong to that third party. Let's write a hashah. Each of us will write a power of attorney to the other, or one of us, I'll write a power of attorney to you or whatever, that you can go take the boat away from him on the grounds that either you're the rightful owner, and therefore you have the right to take it away, or you're acting as my attorney and you're taking it away from him on my behalf. What about Ben? Tosfa said, nevertheless... apparently not. Anyway, Tosfos gives a different answer. Given that these guys are Rishoyim, because each of them is claiming something that doesn't belong to them, then Beis Din is not going to bother with them. Fine, you wrote a Hashah, very nice. We're not going to enforce it against this third party because you guys.
We know is stealing from you.
We don't know if he's stealing from you because you guys.
Because there's one liar here.
Yeah, we don't know. One of you is a Bader Amai, sure. Yeah.
One of them is Bader Amai.
Yeah.
Both of them could be Canadian.
So there's a suffix and a third which guy one of you is the liar. We're not going to...
So we're not going to get involved, basically.
Punishment, we're not going to stick up for the one who may be right.
Well, we don't know who it is, and we don't know, and you don't have any proof.
Justice, I am.
Okay. Well, anyway, let's continue. And how do we see this? The Tani Reb Chiya, because in fact Reb Chiya taught a Braisa, Gazlan Shal Rabim Lab Shmei Gazlan. A person who stole from the Rabim is not considered a Gazlan. So the Nahadoi understood that to mean that I think that's it. Where a person is a Gazlan from one of two people who may or may not own the thing, he's not considered a Gazlan in the sense that Beis Din can't force him to return it.
What's the logic there?
The logic is exactly what we're saying. Not necessarily. Does it belong to either of them? However...
Gazlan Shal Rabim isn't a case of a suffix?
That's what we're talking about over here. That's what we're talking about over here.
In the context of this case.
Yes. Yeah. No. He said it, and the Nahadoi assumed that he's
Still
talking about a
fun,
case...
You're not a Gazlan.
Hold on.
The Nahadoi
assumed that that's what Reb Chiya meant. He didn't mean a case where many people contributed to a fund. Of course not. We're talking about a case like this where they assume that it meant. We're talking about a case like this where we don't even have any reason, we don't even have any evidence that one or the other of them b'chlal owned it. On the other hand, Rav Ashi Amala Olam Shmei Gazlan, no. Rav Ashi says on the contrary. A Gazlan from Rabim is a Gazlan because the fact of the matter is he doesn't have a tainus. We will take it away from him. We will give it back in front of the other two who at least have some kind of taina and let them fight out of it. Well, my loy shmei gazlan. So what does Rav Chiya mean when he says loy shmei gazlan is actually to be machmor on him? Shalom nitzan lehishavon. That if he steals it from them, he's not capable of returning it because how is he going to return it if he just puts it back in kol da'alam devar? That's not a proper hashava. He stole it. Uh-huh. He would have to return it to the actual person who it belongs to, and he can't because he doesn't know who it is. So if I can't, Gazlan Shardavim Lo Shmei Gazlan, meaning he's not like an ordinary Gazlan who can return it and that's it, he's Potter. No, in this
now
case.
He's stuck.
He's worse. Well, if he wanted to do Tshuva, actually, he'd have to pay both of them, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The Rashbam goes on to say that in that case, then Reb Chiya's statement has a more general applicability. It doesn't just mean a specific case like this of Zeh Meshal Avayt, of Zeh Meshal Avayt. It means also, let's say, for example, a person, we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, when we talk about the dinim of honest weights and measures, if a person cheated the public by selling with dishonest weights and measures or whatever at his store, is also a Gazlan Shal Rabim. He stole from many different people, and there's no way of knowing who he actually stole from. Lo Nitzan Lehishavon, Reb Ashi is saying, there's no real way for him to ever properly returned to all those people. So the Gemara says over there, okay, Yasu ben Sochei Rabim, that's sort of the Yebedika thing. You should take the money and use it for public works projects, so at least there's a good chance that everybody who... But it's not really the full-fledged thing. And therefore, the Rashbam quotes over there from the Gemara over there, the Gemara says over there that the situation of dealing with false weights and measures is worse even than Arayas, because Arayas, at least the person, is able to do Shuvah and undo what he did.
Whereas with children.
Yeah, okay. But with Midas, you can't.
Was it Baba Kama where he stole from five people and he's going to pay all of them?
And he ended up having to pay all of them, yeah.
Kind of in the beginning.
Yeah. So actually, yeah, Tosfos quotes that over here, yeah.
According to Rav Chiya, you call it Gazlan when you can return the thing,
So according to the Priya, like this, in other words, this guy, if in a specific case like this, Zemeshalavosai, and a third party takes it, he can't just put it back and call the Alan Grab because that's not a proper Chuvah. More generally, a person who stole from Rabbim, where he doesn't know who the Rabbim were that he stole from, there's no real way for him to fully do Chuvah for it because inevitably, some of the Rabbim that he stole from, he's not going to be able to return it to.
Granted, but how can he say that he's not a Gazlan?
That's what he means. He's not a Gazlan in the sense a regular Gazlan is Behesha Vesagzela, and that's it. Here, he can't really do Behesha Vesagzela.
So he can't do Ishi Vesagzela.
That's what it means. Lo Yishmei Gazlan means he's not called like a regular Gazlan who's able to just return what he stole, and that's that. Here, he needs something more than
Let
that.
Me ask you a question here. Would he be allowed to swear on any other matter?
No, he's a Gazlan.
He is a full-fledged government.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Rav Priya says he's not.
In the context of
Hashava Sagzela, in the context of being able to return the Gzela, he's not a Gazlan. That's what Rav Ashi is saying. The Nahardoi thought to say such a person is not considered a Gazlan in the sense that Beis Din has no recourse against it. Rav Ashi is saying on the contrary. It means that he has no recourse to fully undo what he did.